Thanks for joining us for this Views and Brews podcast, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, everyone, to the Cactus Cafe for tonight's Views and Brews. It's wonderful that you all could be here tonight. I know it's a beautiful evening, and it is pledge drive, so I know you really wanted to be over at KUT answering phones, but thanks for coming out instead. Understanding the complexity of war is much like trying to understand the abstraction of peace. Every generation finds itself grappling with questions of identity amidst propaganda, media, stereotypes, politics. Yet at the heart, we're all people. And as Aldous Huxley said, there are things known and there are things unknown. And in between, there are doors of perception. Here with me tonight are the artists, soldiers, civilians, people, who are knocking on those doors and trying to understand who is on the other side. We have the founder of Songwriting with Soldiers, Darden Smith. Combat vet, Joe Costello, thank you and welcome. Singer and songwriter, Monty Warden, welcome. And combat vet, Saqifa Ahmed. I'm sorry. And we were going to have Karen Vanderveer with us this evening, but last minute she had fallen ill. So Monty and Saqif really came together and said, we're going to make it happen tonight. And they joined us as ringers. So thank you so much for coming in and stepping up. So Darden, let's get started with you. Tell us a little bit about how Songwriting with Soldiers got started. What was the impetus for this?
Songwriting with Soldiers got started. I was doing a concert at Landstuhl Air Base in Germany. A friend of mine, Helen Patton, George Patton's granddaughter, married to a German, go figure. Anyway, she asked me to play a concert there, so I was performing in the the basement of the hospital at Landstuhl. And for 60 guys, they just come out of a rock. And my feeling during the concert was, they weren't listening to me anyway, play. They weren't listening to what I was singing. They were one day out of a rock, and they were just so happy to be in, out of a rock, I think. And I was just sitting there thinking, I don't understand these guys. I don't have anything in common with them, and they have nothing in common with me. And the whole concert, I was sitting there just kind of irritated that I was even there. And then what happened was after the concert, this guy, this Marine, walked up to me and asked me about this guitar I was playing. And he said, hey, is that a Collings guitar? And I go, yeah. He goes, oh, my brother-in-law plays one of those. And I was like, oh, yeah, he's a musician. And he goes, yeah. And I said, so is he in a band? He goes, yeah. I said, what band is he playing? He goes, he's in Beausoleil, which Beausoleil is a, Cajun band. And I was like, wow, your brother-in-law plays guitar with Beausoleil. Is he David? And he goes, yeah. And I said, wow, it's weird. I know your brother-in-law. It's weird because I was thinking I didn't have anything in common with anybody in the room. And then we kept talking. And as it turns out, I know the man that was the best man at his wedding in Monroe, Louisiana. And it started me down this path of realizing that underneath, I told him, I said, I had never spoken with a man in uniform other than like a cop on the side of the road at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was this sort of started this journey for me about looking beneath the uniform, and to the human. And I love to write songs, and I really love to write songs with people that don't write songs, helping them get their story out. It's something I started several, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, really getting into. And Radney Foster and I wrote a song called Angel Flight. That was based on conversations I had with the National Guard here in Austin. And from that, I started getting calls to write songs. And I came up with this idea that if we put professional songwriters together with soldiers and vets and spent 3 days talking and taking their words and using our craft as songwriters, combined with their words and their stories, we could create some magic and help some stories get told. So that was the original impetus. And it was me recognizing that my self-segregation from people who had uniforms. I was judging by the uniform. Underneath that uniform is a human. But me recognizing that in myself and going, oh, how can I use who I am and what I've worked on all my life as songwriting, how can I use to break through other barriers?
Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to talk a little bit more about the retreats in a while. Oh, well, yeah. How many of y'all have been to a Songwriting with Soldiers retreat? Anybody here? No? Two? Three? Okay. Wonderful. Well, from the website, you know, KUT did a video with Songwriting with Soldiers about 3 years ago, was it? 2012, I think? 2 years ago? I mean, it is so moving and powerful, and you can really see the stories that are coming together, and you can see people connecting, and it's really an amazing program. Joe, when did you get started with Songwriting with Soldiers? What is your background with the program?
So I joined University of Texas, Austin as a graduate student in 2013. And then around November, December, Loreen Roy, who is a professor there, asked me if I would like to get involved with this program that helps veterans. And I had no idea about it, but I did a little bit of research on the website and whatnot, and then had a lot of interest in motivation and trauma and therapy and things of this nature. And so it seemed like a natural fit. And then I think it was in July of 2014, went to an all-female retreat as an observer and realized as I'm there to be objective and just observe what's happening, that I'm just melting. I'm really churning into, I became very emotional. And it triggered a lot of my memories because I had a partner while I was in the service. And she would experience a lot. She is a veteran as well. She would experience a lot of these similar type circumstances that women were expressing at the songwriting event, and it was overwhelming. It was a really powerful experience. And so I think mostly Mary Judd and maybe Darden too said you should experience this as a participant. And so I returned to a retreat in New York and wrote a song with Mary Gaucher called Rifles and Rosary Beads. And then I went to another retreat as a peer support and with Gary Burr, Georgia Middleton, and Darden came up with another song, Superman. Mm-hmm. So.
And if you can you tell us a little bit about the process of writing a song together? Like how did it work? I mean, what were your expectations, and then what actually happened?
I didn't really have any expectations, I don't think. I have a background in poetry. I was working as a poetry editor for a few years, so I understood the creative process a little bit. I never collaborated on a song, and I definitely don't have any musical background per se, and so I feel like from the moment you enter a retreat, there's this understanding that it's very it's not clinical. It doesn't feel like you're entering into some sort of judgment zone or anything. It becomes very rejoiceful and musical from the get-go. And so when you kind of go off to collaborate, it feels very natural, very organic, and you're sharing your story with someone who has talents that are pretty extraordinary. And from there, they collaborate with you, and then they start playing the song back, and you workshop it, and then something magical happens at some point there.
We'll definitely get to more of the songwriting in just a minute after a tune, but Monty, what about you? You recently joined Songwriting with Soldiers. Tell us about your experiences.
Well, I've known Darden maybe 30 years, I reckon, close to it, and he was four. I was a senior in high school at the time, but anyhow, and I've always loved his music and always, of course, you know, loved him as a friend. And I was just when he started Songwriting with Soldiers, I was so proud of him and the way it just took off. And I'm real good buddies with Radney Foster, who's been instrumental with this as well. And I'd been wanting to go on a retreat for a while, and I was noticing the folks that Darden was having, and it's not just songwriters. I mean, these are all hit makers. These are million selling heavy hitters, you know. And when Darden called me to come be on a retreat, it was months and months ago, but it was just for February, last February. I was humbled by it, and of course, you know, I jumped at the opportunity. But I got to tell you, it's a testament to him that I was on this thing, because though there are so many different writers and styles of writers, there was not a lot of I'll say a certain kind of diversity that had introduced itself to songwriting with soldiers so often. As a lifetime Austinite, and when I say lifetime, my family moved here in 1838. There's a Austin likes to champion its diversity, and where everybody looks different and acts different, talk, but thinks the same. There's not a lot of diversity of thought, and Darden took it upon himself to actively bring a conservative to songwriting with soldiers in February. And I didn't bring my politics with me, but I brought me with me, and you are who you are. And my experience, I believe in our war on terror, and I believed in the liberation of Iraq and Afghanistan. And there wasn't a lot of those writers that believed in those, and Darden thought it was important. And when I was meeting with these servicemen and women, politics didn't enter into it at all. But who you are enters into it, and it's a volunteer army. So everyone joined up. No one was drafted. So their experiences were, a lot of them started out based from a patriotic point. And I met three or four people that joined right after 9/11. Seemed like several of them had. But I was just so proud of Darden for bringing me in and allowing me to, you know, do my thing and be who I was. And something else that, you know, I
well,
come
your
from.
Your therapist asked me to sort of bring you along.
She did. She's so nice. Right, yeah. Also, I was raised, I've been a professional songwriter since I was 17 years old, and I cut my teeth up in Nashville with how they write up there. And in Nashville, it's a lot of co-writing with people you don't know, which kind of prepared me for songwriting with soldiers, but it's also being extremely prepared. And when I was talking to Darden about this, he said, you cannot go in with any ideas. You cannot. And I said, what do you mean? I said, I'll go in with a snippet, I'll go in with a hook. And he said, can't, it won't work. He said, trust me on this. And the way he said it, and he said it with the love of a brother and not just some dude who had experience with it. And I told my wife, Brandy, I said, well, Darden said, don't go in with any ideas. And she said, baby, he knows. So I went in, didn't have any ideas, and wrote not just nice songs with these soldiers, but wrote just some real good songs with these folks. I didn't have the opportunity to write with Joe, but I got to commiserate with him and fellowship with him. And that was, it was a beautiful part of that weekend. I'm going to be part of the retreat in September, if I hadn't screwed myself out of it from my answers up here. But I'm it's really,
not,
really
not,
looking forward
yet,
to it.
So.
Anyway, there's my answer.
Beautiful. And Sakif, I mean, you hadn't even heard of songwriting with soldiers before this event. But your experience as a vet is kind of really interesting, because you came back and joined the University of Texas in the history department, and you're very involved in the student veteran services. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your experiences coming back from war and being a part of a university institution, and maybe like how the student vet services helped and how programs like Songwriting for Soldiers can help bridge that gap.
So they definitely help by introducing you to other veterans who have similar experiences to you. Because when I first joined the university, it was very hard for me because I was older than a lot of the students that I'm around. And it's nice to have friends that have had similar, the same story as you, and you can kind of share. And people in the military definitely have a different way of talking to each other. We're very liberal with our language. And it's nice to, you know, sometimes let loose and talk like that. And with the student veteran services here at the University of Texas, I wish I knew more about it when I first joined, because they have so many services that all you have to do is go up there and just ask them about. They have career placement services. They have mental health services. They have tutoring. And if you need help with any, like to go through like the veteran benefits and eligibility and disability and things like that, there's people there to help you. All you have to do is just go ask.
And definitely in a little bit, we'll talk about maybe why people don't go ask, why they don't get involved in these organizations. But Darden, you brought your guitar along with you. How about a tune? Can you tell us a little bit about the first song you're going to play?
Yeah, this is actually, I'm going to sing a song I wrote with Joe here. And yeah, if you could hold it for me, just yeah. So this is a song that I wrote with Joe and also Georgia Middleman and Gary Burr. And the song started with Georgia sitting down. So this is the way it works. When we, at the retreat, we just sort of pair people up. You know, we have four songwriters and 10 or 12 soldiers. And just as the days go on, we go, hey, you guys, you go sit down and write a song. And you sit down and the conversation starts. And it starts by the songwriters asking questions like what's going on, you know, and then people start talking. And it's a very open, collaborative nature where as the writer for us, if you're walking by, a songwriting session's going on because it all happens in this sort of big buildings and things. And someone is having a problem. The writer goes, hey, come here and help. You have to go sit down and help. It's like, there's no like privacy, like, oh, hey, you can't get involved in my song. It's welcome. And so Georgia, who happens to be married to Gary Burr.
I'm not anymore.
Yeah. No, they're still married. And, Gary was walking by and Georgia and I think Georgia and Joe were you, it's like you were just stuck and Gary came in and pitched in. And then at a certain point, then Gary went off and worked on something else. And then I went out and said, how's it going? And Georgia goes, hey, sit down. And so it wound up being all four of us wrote this song. But what's interesting is that without any of our parts not there, the song wouldn't have been the same. You know, so we all pitch in, we all collaborate. And it's an equal collaboration as well. When the song is written, the soldiers are all registered with ASCAP, American Society of Composers and Publishers, as co-writers on their song. Okay, so they're seen as the contributor to the song, and they participate in their story. It's because it is their story. So, this is called Superman. You want to tell them about this, Joe? You know?
Sure. I forgot how Georgia prompted the discussion. I think she might have asked me what prompted me to join the service, and we started a discussion that basically got towards this point that I realized in 2010 or 11 that I had locked part of myself away when I joined the service, and the part of myself that felt most vulnerable when I joined the service was my childhood. And so I've spent, you know, years trying to get that back or tap into that sense of my childhood. And that's what this song is about.
When I was a boy, I went up on the roof. I wanted to fly. I'd seen the movies where he'd save the world. If he could do it, why couldn't I? War came calling, that's when I knew to protect myself what I had to do. I'd locked myself away, it wasn't safe for me there. There was no one to hold my hand. Had to learn how to fight, put a man in my sight. And that never was part of my plan. There was no place for my kind of Superman. Came home, I spent 10 years looking, trying to find that little boy who used to catch frogs, could outrun the sun, and his whole world's joy. I feel like right now we're finally talking, but not that long ago I'd locked myself away. It wasn't safe for me there in that dangerous faraway land. It never felt right. It was the darkest of nights, but it's always been part of my plan to find my way back to Superman. So if you're lost, keep believing that little boy you thought you were leaving is waiting on you to understand. What it really means to be Superman. So it's just a song. You know, it's not like a big deal. We're not writing the Magna Carta here. It's a song. Okay, but it's Joe's story. So what I found most fascinating of getting involved in this program is that when Joe and I wrote that song, okay, I it's hard for me to sing that song. It's so emotional. It triggered something in me that completely, like, opened the floodgates, man. It was just like, whoa, there's something primal, like, about boyhood in that song. Okay, it's not my story, it's Joe's story. Joe's story is my story. Okay, there's a greater universality here than we often think of, and through collaboration and art you open up that universality. And we often find in our retreats that what's cool is that the soldiers hear each other's songs, and there's, which we didn't set out to do this, but they actually hear themselves in each other's songs. So one of the most beautiful parts about it. So.
Yeah, it's really beautiful as well. I mean, and you know, where is that space for kind of poetry and arts in the service? Did you find that that was really not a part of the vocabulary there? Or did you still connect? You said you were into poetry before you started.
I definitely told no one that I liked poetry while I was in service.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about this prospect of going to war and coming back, this reverse culture shock, you know, seeing the world kind of like Alice saw the world after seeing the Wonderland, completely different, you know? What kind of struck you upon returning home that you really did not expect? Sakif and Joe, anything?
I think the biggest thing that struck me and what I remember the most is when I came home from Iraq, I was, I'd say, like 18 or 19. And I remember going out with my friends from high school. And, you know, this was just a year out after we graduated high school. And they were still doing the same things and hanging out with the same people. And I remember thinking, how can you guys, you know, act like nothing's changed and my entire life is completely turned upside down? And I remember, and that always sticks out to me the most, is how everyone who doesn't experience that just goes on with life like normally, and we come back and nothing is the same.
Yeah, totally. And where did you go to kind of communicate about that or help yourself understand that disconnect?
No, I just kind of, you know, it's just a thought to myself, and now that I'm older, I realized that we went different paths, and you know, it's just how life is, and people go different ways.
Yeah. Joe, what about you?
I think the biggest challenge I faced, well, my father was in the service, so I had a little bit of a context for understanding hardship tours and things of that nature, but the whole process of getting over there, and I mean, the military is the world's most efficient organization in terms of logistics, and what they can do is pretty phenomenal. Though when you come when I came back to the U.S., what I found most shocking was that people really had a very different understanding of what's happening, not just in the Middle East, but worldwide. There was just there was a gulf between what I saw of the world and what other people saw, and so I felt very alienated, and it was a challenge in order to figure out how to cross that chasm that had emerged.
Mm-hmm. And Darden and Monty, you know, through Songwriting with Soldiers, do you get a better understanding of that chasm, of what went on? Do you understand war?
No, I don't understand at all. I'm not a soldier, and you can never understand unless you've been there. And so it doesn't matter how many songs I write. I can have an empathy with the people that I work with, but the one thing I do, the one thing I understand clearly from working and getting to know all the soldiers is that I don't understand and I'll never understand. And so to pretend that I understand or to say I get it, I don't. I've never done it. You know, I understand what it's like to sit down and write songs with a vet or a soldier and to become their friend. And I understand what it's like to be me, but I don't. Can't. There's no way.
My shittiest day at work, no one's ever shot at me. You know? And that's
and he's played some bad
and
bars.
I played some bad
you played the Cactus
places.
Cafe.
It's rough.
Mean, really.
I mean, it's, you know, like the commonality of musicians, and particularly road musicians or studio musicians, we have our own language and on this, but if you're not in it, you're not in it. And if you're not a soldier, you're not a soldier. I mean, for me, And I told Joe this. My grandmother was a immigrant Jew from Poland, and she came over with her nuclear family in 28. They were Warsaw Jews, so they just barely missed the Holocaust. But all of their cousins, all of my cousins, are gone because of the madness of Adolf Hitler. And so her cousins' dreams were to stay alive one more day. And the only dream I've ever had is to, you know, play the guitar and make rhyme. And that's the only job I've ever had. So the men and women that keep us free have allowed me to have, by any stretch of the imagination in any other era in history, a frivolous dream. And they do so, it's a volunteer army, as I said, they do so willingly. And it is so humbling. And when I was at this thing, being around recent combat vets, their sense of humor and their sense of love for one another, even though so many of these people hadn't met till that weekend. Most of them hadn't even met each other, yet as these guys were saying, they spoke the same language, the same vernacular. It was really a neat thing to observe, but I mean, I don't know anything about what that experience would be like, but I know I helped a couple of them put their experiences into song. And though it by no means music therapy or anything like that, but just, you know, help them put something together that they dug, you know.
Exactly.
We were finished with it.
You know, and I was watching a lot of the videos from the retreats, and one theme that kept coming up amongst the soldiers was this idea of, like, it's real. You can just be real. And a lot of times there's so much kind of BS, you know, and nobody's really real with you when you come back. And, you know, I wondered what your thoughts were, Saqif and Joe, about this idea of authenticity, you know, and how important that is to connect authentically with somebody and not just, no, I'm just kidding, the same old crap that everybody's been telling me.
Yeah, I was actually speaking with a combat vet this afternoon at lunch, and he's participated in several retreats, and this is a person who, upon experiencing pretty severe traumatic moments, he said that Songwriting with Soldiers offered him the first time to talk with people in a very grounded way, where they weren't trying to fix him with whatever protocol or methods that had been approved. And he felt that his ability to express what had happened to him, just even a sliver of what had happened to him in that environment, was the biggest breakthrough. And so I think that that's just a real testament to being around people that are being very genuine and authentic and like Darden mentioned, you know, when art is really honest, you do tap into something very primal that we can all identify with.
Mm-hmm. And so, Keith, you know, I had asked a little bit earlier for you to talk about what are some of the things that keep students from going to the student vet services. Is that one? Do they think they're just going to get the same old, or what do you think?
I think it's a combination of they've just been being told the same thing, or they get the runaround a lot. They'll be sent to one office and then sent to another one, and they will go nowhere. And you know, it's kind of like the systematic failure of the VA, as we're seeing right now. And I think another reason why veterans don't use it is just because they're apprehensive about going in front of someone and asking for help. I think we're in the military society where you don't really want to ask anyone for help. You really want to be able to figure things out for yourself. You are the strongest person. You're the strongest individual. So I think that there's a combination of the two.
Yeah, totally. You know, and you both came back and went to school, right? Joe, you said you went to graduate school, and Sakif, you went to school. What are some particular challenges for students coming back and joining a university system? Or what did you find?
I had a hard time with discussions when you're trying to engage in some sort of critical discussion of any topic. But I had grown up in a military family where we traveled extensively, so I had this sort of this different perspective of somebody that grew up with a hometown and hometown friends, and their ideologies, their outlook on life was very myopic in some ways, and mine felt a little bit more, just different. And I think that was the biggest hurdle that I faced, was just listening and trying to understand what it might be like to have that sense of integration into a community. And so, just communicating on that level.
Yeah. Sakif?
I think it's the same thing as far as like communicating. One of the things that I don't do anymore is I don't tell like my fellow classmates that I'm a veteran. It's because my first semester I did that, and you know, people ask a lot of inappropriate questions and, you know, things you don't really want to talk about. And, you know, it's hard for me to not, tell people about my story and things like that, because you're really like, you know, you're missing out on 6 years of my life. Like I did other things. So now I just, you know, kind of, yeah, I'm a student, I'm here. Like, I just don't talk about it, and it's easier and it avoids the questions.
Well, I'd definitely like to open things up for questions, but Monty, I do believe you might be able to borrow Darden's guitar and have a go.
Don't scratch it.
I gotta pick.
You gotta pick. Professional songwriter, did he bring a guitar? No.
All I brought were the hits, folks. All I brought were the hits. You know, and something that I want to say also about the songwriting with soldiers is give these veterans an opportunity to write with professional writers. You know, and it's not just songwriting with soldiers. It's professional songwriting with soldiers. You know, and so we're trained to get to the core of an idea real quick and in a catchy way, and something that's, you know, stays in your head. And anyway, with the advent of the CD burner, I have seen so many more people call themselves singer-songwriters. Most of the time we call them can't-singer-songwriters. But I've discovered over the past 10 years, it's like you give a guy a set of steak knives for Christmas, and in 6 weeks he never thinks he's a heart surgeon. But you give the guy a guitar, and 6 weeks he thinks he's Hank Williams. You know, so it's how to ingratiate yourself with an audience by Monty Warden. I wrote this tune on the last retreat. Was it the most recent one? Yeah. Back in February with a combat veteran named Chuck Hawthorne, and he's a veteran of the liberation of Baghdad and the Battle of Fallujah, and 25-year veteran.
25 years as a Marine.
And I was talking to Chuck. He, you know, we, hello, how are you? And, you know, share a piece of your soul. And he and I got to talking, and he had just written a real heavy tune, I believe with you.
With me.
Right? Yeah.
And they call me Mr. Happy.
Yeah, Chuckle Smith. And so he and I were talking, and I was noticing beforehand, as I said, the sense of humor that so many of the soldiers were enjoying, and that wasn't translating, I was noticing, a lot into the songs. The levity of an outrageously ridiculous, dangerous situation. And so I was talking to him, and I said, man, you know, it's amazing to me when I see these Islamic fundamentalists on television, just how mad they are. They're so, I've never seen anybody so mad. And he said, well, you ought to see them shooting at you sometime. That's, you know. And so I said, what do you reckon that's all about? And he goes, I don't know, you know. And so we were, you know, you can all get, because here we are at UT, you know, centuries of sectarian violence and regional conflict and all that smarty pants shit that's not, you know, anything to do with anything. So, anyway, so Chuck and I came up with this scenario.
Is this guitar on?
Is it the lack of beer and bacon that makes them come unglued? No other logical explanation for all the crazy they do. It's like the 7th century, except with RPGs, you know the whole damn place is screwed. But when I can't have beer or bacon, hell, I get pissed off too. I have tried to understand their culture. I've been told that we must empathize. That makes some come unglued. No other logical explanation for all the crazy they do. It's like the 7th century, except with RPGs. You know the whole damn place is screwed. But when I can't have beer or bacon, hell, I get pissed off too. When I And that's what I brought to the party. So,
you know, I think that speaks to something that's very interesting about going to war and about being at war, is that in order to be at war with someone, you have to objectify them. You have to stereotype them and put them in a category, you know? And then coming back to a society where life is not like that. Like, you need to understand people for who they are, and you're not at war in that scenario, I think is a really kind of difficult juxtaposition to integrate with.
We all objectify people every day.
Yeah, it's
true. All we do.
But not always to...
But I'll also say this. If there's a group of several million people who tell you their objective is to kill you and your family, I'm going to believe them. And I think we ought to do something about that. Yeah, I'm going to not trust them. You know,
but what I'm getting at is, like,
hey, you know, folks,
there's a different, you know, throughout history, we've always had to figure out how to fight wars, you know, and how to get civilians to fight wars, basically. And that's a really difficult kind of world to come back to after you've been in that combat scenario. I'm thinking, did you have any ideas about that? I mean, even, you know, poetic, just thoughts about what those dilemmas about categorization and objectification are? Or maybe how to negotiate that back in civilian life?
I feel like when you I mean, I can just speak about my experience. When I joined the military, it's about deconstruction of your ego, and it's really about integrating yourself into a team, and that team wears a uniform, and you know, you don't want to be a hero because you compromise the team, and so that when you get out of the service, there's a sense of looking for the mission, looking for that performance metric that's not there all of a sudden. And so as you're negotiating your civilian world, it seems like the real challenge becomes, how do you begin taking on that burden of giving yourself the feedback and internalizing who's in control, which is you, of your experience. And so I think that the the word objective is fraught with difficulties. You know, what's really objective? You're bringing all your experiences, your emotions. I mean, your story, your narrative is coming to that objectivity. So it's a real challenge, no matter what situation you're facing. But I do feel like there is a relearning that needs to take place from combat to peaceful, not peaceful, but to when you're fighting, when you're not fighting. There is a level of adjustment and learning to go from the team environment to, you know, the internal locus of control, if you will.
Yeah. Sakif?
I think I just try to treat everyone the same, not bad or anything. And, you know, I think, like, even when I was in the service and when I left, I definitely try to keep that part of my personality the same. And so, like, for me, it wasn't that hard to not objectify anyone. It was just, I think we do it naturally, but I don't outwardly do it and things like that.
Well, I'd love to open things up for questions. Amy Chambliss has a rover mic, so just raise your hand. But make sure you're on mic so we can get it on tape. Right over here? No? Go ahead, James.
All right, so I've been bartending here for about 5 years, and over that time I probably, you know, served like 100 or so UT veterans, and I probably worked with, you know, some really good group of veterans behind the bar itself. I kind of often wonder if the reason why, like, you know, like the UT Veteran Association and things of that aren't as successful as drawing the veterans on campus in, because you have a tendency of, like, what I see of students coming in who are trying to not embrace, not totally become what they were in the military, you know, that rank and file, you know, like, I'm here doing a job, and I'm here the sob job, and they're trying to embrace the ideas of being an individual. And so, like, it seems like they're trying to find this weird, like, dichotomy of, like, you know, still being, you know, embracing their military background, but still looking, you know, a way to reassess themselves as being themselves while they're becoming a student. I mean, I'm wondering if you know, like, trying to find how to make that step while not always falling back into, you know, the military tradition. Does it make any sense, guys? I don't know. I'm just kind of ranting now.
Is it kind of like, how do you negotiate both parts of your identity while on campus? Maybe some just want to leave them behind?
I feel like one of the primary challenges is that a lot of younger folks are joining the service, and that's their indoctrination into career, into adulthood, and so that's the training that they take forth. And there is a sense of personal responsibility. You know, a compliment I got in the service was, even though I was a lower ranking at the time, somebody was really impressed that they could turn their back and the mission would get done. And I think that right now we listen to a lot of rhetoric of, you know, oh, these kids don't have a good work ethic and blah, blah, blah. And you don't get that from a veteran. But one of the caveats is you'll get a very poor person that may take it a little bit too far or can't contextualize situations as readily. So it is a challenge, but I feel like it's something that we all face with whatever our first job is, so to speak.
I definitely feel the same way. I was 17 when I joined the Navy, so I grew up in that world and that in that environment. So when I came to the university, I definitely brought that same work ethic and motivation and kind of just check all the boxes and do all the things and stay under the radar. And, you know, the mission was getting good grades. So that's all I focused on.
Well, and also, you know, just in regards to just ingratiating themselves back into society, integrating themselves back as well, every single veteran on the retreat, how many there were, you reckon? A half dozen, 12, a dozen of them? We're talking about just in the military, reaching out for help is a difficult thing to do, and particularly when it's, you know, PTSD, the last word in that is disorder. So if you're asking, it's very hard to, you know, that just means something's wrong with you. Hey, I think something's wrong with me. That's a difficult thing, especially for, I would think, a young person and certainly a warrior to have to raise your hand and say that. And Darden and I were talking the other day, it's certainly, you know, an improvement up from shell shock, you know, what they used to call it. But on the retreat, I wrote a tune with Sergeant Mario Cavazos about just call it, let's drop the D. And since then, when I got home, there's actually just this starting movement of just beginning to call it just PTS and drop the D, you know. And when I had Googled that as I was copywriting the song, registering the song, both Senator Bernie Sanders and George W. Bush have talked about that, and I can't think of one other instances where those two men have probably agreed on anything.
Someone asked him what day it was.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that would be, I've never been in a situation in my life where even asking for help and the diagnosis has disorder in it. I think it would be a very, I don't know about these two gentlemen, but I would think it would be very difficult, you know.
I also think there's something different about just our society and the way that we understand mental illness, for one, and also a whole service generation. Because my grandpa had shell shock, didn't talk about the war ever, you know, World War II, and served in England. But a lot of people didn't. And there was kind of this unity of the way that you dealt with things as a society. And now, you know, the more that we understand trauma, the more that we understand mental illness, there's also this re-understanding of how we understand ourselves as civilians, as soldiers, and that whole interaction. Another question? Yes. I'm just going to reiterate that you have a beautiful voice, and I heard everything, but it didn't get on tape. What was the most difficult subject for you to write about, or what was the most difficult thing?
Every retreat is like a for me, because I'm sort of a softy, and I don't write. I have a hard time writing funny songs. I go dark. So for me, it's a series of, it's like over the course of the weekend, I'll write five or six songs, and it's kind of a spiral down. I get more involved and more emotionally open as it goes, and so it's usually every retreat there's one of them that just completely knocks me out, and so I can't really pinpoint the hardest, you know. They're all hard, man. They're all hard. It's a cumulative thing over the course, like some retreats are harder. And it has to do with different stories of trauma. And the one thing we have to learn as songwriters is how to remain completely neutral. So no matter what is said, we go, wow, what happened next? And don't get stuck on, because you do hear, I mean, the whole thing is you can tell me anything. And I'm not going to evaluate you or judge you or but no matter what, if you're we're all the songwriters, we're all softies, you know, we're all like just totally emotional. It's you can't be a songwriter and not be sort of open to human emotion, and so you're going to absorb stuff, and that's called, at the end of the retreat, the soldiers generally feel fantastic and the songwriters want to lay down because we've absorbed, it's called secondary trauma. And so we absorb that. And so there's a huge fallout period that we've had to learn to see and recognize that we have to take care of ourselves. So I could tell you tons of stories that you would, if you're a veteran, you would recognize the stories. And so imagine your hardest story. We've probably heard something kind of like that. And every retreat, I'm shocked at the level of strength that is embodied, and that these men and women, they're still walking around, which is amazing. It makes me realize how incredibly blessed I've a life I've had, and then I haven't. No matter what I've seen, it hasn't been like that. I'm sorry, it was a very long answer, but yeah.
And well, first of all, thank you for your service. For me, the it wasn't one story that was difficult. It was the experience of everything that I had learned as a songwriter coming up to that, because it was the first time I'd ever written in my life where I wasn't sitting there going, understand, or right on, or yeah, or you know, or like I'd be writing with these fellows, and they would say something that had happened to them, an experience singularly unfamiliar to me, except in the movies, and they would go, you know, and I go, no, man, that scared the shit out of me. I don't know. Well, me too. And then they would go on to that, but it was just that this was just the day to day experiences that they wanted to write about, and it wasn't so much. I mean, the people with whom I wrote, it wasn't like writing some tune about wounded spirits or damaged souls. People, it wasn't that. They wanted to sit down and write a good country song with me. But I listened to all of their stories, and I found they were wanting to tell so many stories, and each writing session, which lasts, what do you reckon, 2 or 3 hours, something like that, had 5 songs in it, you know, and then you just have to zero in on one, and it was as enlightening and humbling an experience, and I just want to say this, and I certainly encourage y'all to go to the website Songwriting with Soldiers, but I think this thing is in its infancy and is going to go on, and I think, you know, God doesn't make mistakes, and I really think Darden Smith's name is going to live on forever through this organization. This is a remarkable thing, and the fact that y'all have seen this with the man that founded this is a special thing that we don't often get to do things like that. And I mean, it's like a Clara Barton or something. It's really amazing.
Well, we have time for about one more question.
Hey, folks, I got a question for the veterans on stage. I'm a veteran myself, not of combat, but of the submarine force, which in and of itself has its own unique challenges and things to cope with. And my question for y'all is this. Two things y'all brought up on stage. One, the idea of PTSD and how when you're in the military, it's very difficult to come out and ask for help, no matter what the issue is, because you're not going to be addressed that issue is not going to be addressed. You are going to be ostracized. You're going to be removed from your unit, and the people who are your brothers and your sisters and your friends are not going to have one more person to count on. You know, watch section's going to go port and starboard instead of 3 section. You're going to have one less person in your platoon. And so, on top of that, and so that's what we can all agree on. All veterans here can agree that that's a norm in the service. Another thing is what a couple of my friends who are veterans have talked about is how today, there are people who milk the idea of being a damaged veteran. It is, in some ways, fashionable for them to play the damaged vet. And Darren, I'll be honest, when you came and spoke to Penny Green's Inequality in the American Dream class, I was sitting in the second row. I can't get away from you for some reason, but I'll be honest.
It must be very difficult for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a struggle.
Talk about
daily.
Damage.
I'm getting through it, man, you know, moment at a time. But I'll say that I'm suspicious, and I've been suspicious, and I'm not anymore. I think what you're doing is good, but I think, is this a guy who's just trying to boost his career by getting some good material for good songs? Now, this is what a lot of veterans are going to think. This is
That's
why
cool.
I ask the veterans. This is real talk, guys. And so how do you overcome that stigma to actually put yourself in that situation with someone? How do you get other veterans to want to do that? Because there is
such... You mean
such
to come to the retreat?
There is such a norm against wanting to ask for help, and on top of that, there is such an issue with people who milk help who really don't need it. People who are admin clerks in the Air Force who never left the wire in Bagram. And I'm sorry, I'm sure hearing the klaxons go off and hearing mortars is terrifying. I don't know. Again, I was a submariner. But there are people in the military who didn't go what y'all went through. And they're acting like they went through much worse. And there are people who aren't going to want to go to this program because they're afraid that they're going to be lumped in that category. So for y'all veterans on stage, how do you address that? How do you address getting people to want to...
I just have to say, as a conservative, I thought I was going to be the asshole in the room. You've taken all the pressure off, man.
Hey, man. I had to give you a relief valve after that comment.
Man, you don't know how good he feels.
So cute, Joe.
I think trauma comes in all forms, and it doesn't matter if you don't directly see combat. Everyone in the military, no matter what their job is, they all contribute something to the fighting force. And it doesn't really matter where it comes from or how they, what they see. It's people react to things differently. And I think that's how we should approach it.
I feel like the certain people are predisposed to trauma, and certain people are much more resilient. And there is no screening process during the military recruitment. It's I'm gonna get whatever you want, money, bonuses, all that jazz. And so the military really could use a little bit better of a screening process to find or identify people that are predisposed to trauma because they have no place in a conflict. And I think that that's one piece of it. And I also know of some people who are milking the system. And what's hard about saying that is... oftentimes you can feel completely normal, but then suddenly you get a chest pain and you're like, holy, I'm having a heart attack, and you're really just having a panic attack. And so something small in the training and in your quotidian day of military life could have worked its way into your mind because you are not built for resilience. It could be something from your childhood that was triggered in the military, and then 10 years later starts manifesting in these really maladaptive behaviors. So it's a real, I'd be real cautious about identifying somebody as milking a system, but I would also say it's a great point that we should look at people entering the service and do they have the capacity to handle what they're about to...
Hmm. I mean, it's fine that it's wrong to label people this way, but you still have to address this if you want people to reap the benefits of
it. Well, and I'll also say that if it's about, trying to boost your career with as war-weary a nation as we have, this ain't the way to boost your career.
This has not done anything for my career.
Right, right.
How do I address it? If you'll hold on a second, I'll answer your question. I don't worry about it. That's not the point. The point is we're having these, and a lot more veterans will be interested than will show up. And it's a struggle to get veterans, active duty and veteran, to show up. We know that. It's like, and I think subliminally, they know they're about to open up Pandora's box. And we all shy away from that. And if it's time to come to the retreat, come to the retreat. If you don't want to come to the retreat, that's cool. It's free, man. It's free. And, none of the songwriters, like, I don't do this from, it's not about my career. My career is like, I'm not even sure I have one anymore. I have a lot of work, but I don't even know what my career is anymore. And I know that I really dig this work. And it's not to heal anybody. I just want to write some songs, and this is an amazing opportunity to use my craft, which is songwriting. So I spent 40 years perfecting my craft. It's very easy for me to just focus on trying to get an album that somebody will buy. Like, I've done that. So how about if I use my craft to try to help somebody tell their story? To me, that's like the highest form of art that I can possibly grab onto. And I'm approached by a lot of songwriters to try to that want to come do this. I'm approached by a lot of managers who want their young songwriter artists to do this. I don't have any interest in having those people in the program because they're trying to forward their career on the back of a soldier's story. It's not what this is about, man. This is private. I don't care what happens with the songs afterwards. All I care about is in that moment when I'm sitting across a soldier from across from a soldier and he's telling me a story, I want that soldier to see me seeing him. Done.
I think something to add there is that it's not music therapy. It's a creative arts program. So there is oftentimes, maybe as a heuristic, we say people that are going to these retreats are traumatized veterans. They're not. They're veterans. And so it's up to, you know, after the fact, people may mislabel some certain folks. Like Monty brought up, he's just trying to tell some funny songs, you know, and so that happens as well.
And Jason, your question really does speak to all of the pressures that we feel about perception. You know, how are we going to be perceived? How are we going to be perceived by the people on my team or in the military or civilians or artists or songwriters? And hopefully, maybe this is just about shedding all of those expectations and just getting down to the fact that we're all people and that we're remade human.
Rebecca, if a veteran feels that way, I would encourage them to go to a retreat. They won't feel that way by the end of it.
Well, listen, nobody, you know, it's like, I think one of the things that I love about this program is that it, you know, I got into it because I realized my own prejudices about my own feelings about soldiers. And it, like, I had them all shattered. And what the whole thing is, people have, a lot of people look at me and they immediately judge me, you know? So how about we sit down and it's not about, when you collaborate with somebody, in order to have a true collaboration, you have to surrender your own expectations and put it out in the middle, okay? So let's put this story out in the middle, and I'll put my craft in the middle, okay? And we'll come up with something that we could not have done without each other. Through that process, I'm gonna understand something about you that I didn't understand before, and you're gonna understand something about me that you didn't understand before. And all we've done is meet each other as human beings, not as soldier and civilian. That's the point is, let's get, you know, to look beyond the uniform. My uniform, too. I have a uniform. You know, so.
And a song is forever. The song's always written. Forever. You know, it always exists, yeah. And so. It didn't before.
Exactly. So, you know. How about one more song before we have to close for the evening?
Okay. So, thank you all for being here as well. Thank you. So I wrote this with a guy named Dustin Kreitz. I'll tell you this story. It's written on my skin. You might get the picture, the shape that I'm in. This one's for my buddies. The gone as gone can be. And every time I reach out, they're right in front of me. Now this one's for my lover. She's on the inside of my arm. Is she my little Keisha? She keep me safe and you might think I'm crazy, like I don't have a plan. I'm a decorated soldier, a illustrated man. I got four letters on my left hand and four more on my right. I hit them with somebody wants to fight. Oh, and I got a few dark secrets that just won't let me be. I keep them in very few can see. And brother, if I trust you, I'm gonna let you take a look. All this ink is just a bookmark, and I'm an open book. You might think I'm crazy, try to understand. I'm a decorated soldier, I'm an illustrated man. You might think I'm crazy, just try to understand. I'm a decorated soldier, I'm an illustrated man. Highly decorated soldier, the illustrated man. Thank you. By the way, Gary Nicholson was also a part of that, songwriter Gary Nicholson. It was me, Gary Nicholson, myself, and a soldier named Dustin Kreitz, who was covered in tattoos. Good man.
Beautiful. Well, you know, before we close, there's this little anecdote. Susan Sontag was putting on Waiting for Godot in Sarajevo during the shelling. And she was asked, why would you do this? Why would you put on a play and make people come out when they're fearing for their life? Like, aren't you afraid that they won't survive? And she said, she didn't say this, the theater director in Sarajevo said, it's not important in a war zone to remain alive always. It's important to remain human in the moment that you are alive. And I think, you know, what you're doing, Darden, and coming together through this art reminds us all that it's important to remain human, even when you're back at home, even when we're in the midst of discussing all of the war and the propaganda and everything. We have to reconnect with our humanity. So thank you. Thank you, Darden. Thank you, Monty. Thank you, Sakif. And thank you, Joe, for coming out. Thank you, all of you, for coming out this evening.
You've been listening to A Views and Brews, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas, for KUT Radio. You'll find a complete archive of all of our Views and Brews in the iTunes store, or go to KUT.org for more information. Thanks for listening.